interesting discussion with Josh Rogers, the senior wealth planning strategist from Wells Fargo. Josh, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks. Glad to be here, Roger.
Well, traditionally, on New Year's Eve and in the week coming up to New Year's Eve, one's inbox tends to be overwhelmed by requests for last-minute charitable deductions. And historically, those were viewed and treated by the IRS in a certain way. The recent changes to the tax law have given, you know, some differences to how that is approached by the government and therefore should be approached by the individual donor. Do you want to give us a little bit of background on that before we get into some specific ways of trying to deal with it?
Yeah, most importantly, I'd say that you need to look back to the 2017 tax reform. Many of us haven't dealt with that in our individual taxes yet, and we haven't seen the impact. Importantly, I would say, more than anything, before you get into a gifting strategy, understand that you should talk with your tax or legal advisors for your individual situation. The 2017 tax reform really made quite a big difference in the deductions available to the individual taxpayer, principally by increasing the standard deductions. I mean, obviously the politicians led with the decreases in the tax rates and the increases in the tax bracket thresholds. But importantly, that standard deduction doubled almost to now it's at $12,000 for individual taxpayers, $24,000 for those that are married filing jointly. And on the flip side, what that means is that you're going to have a lot less itemized filers, okay? So you're going to have a lot less people that are reporting these charitable contributions and actually reaping the tax benefit.
And just to take that into black and white, only if you are itemizing deductions is the act of writing a charitable donation having a positive impact on your tax liability, correct?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Go ahead, Roger.
No, I was going to say, so with a $24,000 for married couple standard deduction, that's a pretty big number for most taxpayers. And unless people have, I suppose, a large mortgage and some other deductions, that's not going to be easy to get to.
Exactly right. And you also want to consider not just the charitable portion and that charitable contribution deduction, but also some of the other deductions that people may be used to have either been reduced and some have even completely been eliminated. So it's really important to consult with your tax advisors and see which deductions still apply in your individual situation. I will say that the Joint Committee on Taxation actually got in and did an estimate, and they believe that the number of itemized filers, those that could receive the benefit of the charitable deduction, is going to drop by more than 60%, almost 30 million less itemized filers in 2018.
So are there strategies that would allow individual taxpayers to try to maximize the deductibility of charitable contributions? Are there ways to approach this that you can discuss with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the most common and what people really are taking advantage of is something that you might call bunching or bundling, you may have heard it called, which really just means that you're, instead of making a last-minute 2018 charitable contribution, you might wait until January 2nd to make that charitable contribution so that it will apply for your 2019 taxes, and then go on through 2019 making your standard charitable deduction donation. But in that way, you've combined multiple years of giving into a single tax year.
And can you do that? I suppose you could do that for any number of years. In other words, you could decide, okay, I'm going to here's my check. I'm having a good year this year. I'm going to write a large check that's really going to be all my charitables for the next 3 or 4 years.
Well, your charitable deduction, the important thing is your charitable deduction applies for the year that you make it.
Right.
So if you were to make a large donation in 2018, per se, if you had a great year in 2018, you make a large donation, what will happen is that deduction will apply up to, there's some very large adjusted gross income limitations, and then you'd be dealing with carryover of that deduction. It can be carried over for up to 5 years. So you can still reap the benefit over many years, but you're going to run into those limits. You know, you're talking 50% of adjusted gross income, 30%, depending on who you're giving it to and the type of property or cash you're giving.
That would be a very large donation. The other thing I've read about but don't really understand are donor-directed funds. Can you explain how those work?
Yeah, donor-directed funds, often called donor-advised funds also. So a donor-advised fund, the best way to think about it usually is to consider it in comparison to what would be a private foundation that have been around for generations and people understand those. Generally, people would look at a private foundation and think that's only for the ultra-high net worth individuals. That doesn't really apply to me, and that's in large part because of the high cost to set up and to actually operate a private foundation. Where donor-advised fund comes in is you have these large financial institutions and banks that have created what's called a supporting organization, okay? And a supporting organization can accept donations from donors in much smaller amounts. Typically, the starting minimum balance for these accounts is $5,000. And they essentially, for the IRS purposes, they essentially pool all of these donations together. So it looks just like you're contributing to a public charity. You get those higher donation limits, and you get the benefits of donating in the year that you make the contribution or the donation to that donor advised fund. But where the benefit comes in and where it looks like a private foundation is that it's the money that one person donates, the single donor, is held in a specific account, and that donor is going to be able to advise the sponsoring organization on where they want that donation to be granted, where they want grants to be doled out.
So will a typical a bank like yours, will you be able to say, request that the money go out to any basically 501c3? Is that how that works?
Yeah, specifically public charities is where those can go. There are a few more restrictions than you would normally have with a private foundation. So a private foundation, again, you have those higher costs and those higher expenses, but it gives you a little more control over where it can go. You can go out to public charities, but you can also make grants to specific individuals for charitable purposes. Whereas with a donor-advised fund, basically the benefit you're getting is you're getting that upfront tax deduction for just opening the account and putting it in there. But then you can wait, honestly, as long as you want to make that donation, okay, or to actually make the grant out of the account. And yeah, so you would just go into a Wells Fargo or, you know, Fidelity, other large financial institutions that offer these supporting organizations, and you open an account, and it will honestly just sit there like an account, and it'll, you know, bear interest, grow in the market, however it's invested.
And what kind of fees do those kinds of accounts typically accrue?
So, and that's where one of the best benefits of the donor advised fund comes in. Whereas a private foundation, you're talking about all of your, in, you know, the foundation's tax reporting.
Right, a lot of bureaucratic requirements.
Exactly. Whereas all of that is kind of bundled in the package, and the donor advised fund is really just going to charge typically a small annual administrative fee, usually less than 1% of the value.
Okay. Any other observations you have on sort of how the tax laws have affected charitable donations or other recommended year-end strategies to think about, although it's probably too late?
Yeah, we're a day late and a dollar short on the year-end strategies, but I would say the charitable contributions, it's still an incredibly important part of your year-end planning. There are lots of other options out there, charitable trusts that can possibly serve you. Get out there and talk with your tax advisor as far as that goes. I'd also just like to note that there have been some small changes regarding IRA and 401k limits going forward in 2019. Those limits are going to go up by $500. There have been also some really beneficial changes to 529 plans in that now up to $10,000 a year can be used to pay for primary and secondary education as opposed to just university.
So was that a part of the new tax law that they're allowing essentially 529s to be used for prep school?
Yes, that's a new change. It's one that a lot of people are taking advantage of. You know, 529 plans, you're not getting that federal tax deduction up front, but you're allowed the kind of tax-free growth federally. Really, the tax benefits in the immediate sense come at the state level. But that change that now you can pay for those prep schools, I know there's a lot of people out there with kids and grandchildren in private schools, and that'll be a welcome relief.
We've been talking with Josh Rogers of Wells Fargo, a senior wealth planning strategist. Are you located here in the Salt Lake City area, Josh?
I am. Okay. Yeah, I'm just downtown in the Wells Fargo Tower.
Well, we appreciate your taking the time with us. Happy New Year. Mountain Money. We'll be right back after this.